Let's talk about the mid-career donut hole. Before talking about the mid-career donut hole, let's focus on that middle, on that first part of that phrase, mid-career. What is mid-career? We all seem to agree that mid-career is about, let's call it 5 years. And then you have mid-career. Now, linguistically, what comes after mid-career is late career. But that doesn't sound right. I don't want to say I'm late career. That sounds like I've given up on my career, that I don't want to grow anymore, that I'm not interested in my technical skills anymore, and that my 3 o'clock meeting this afternoon is actually my retirement party. We don't have anything really great to talk about anything other than early career and mid-career. Everything is mid-career. Your whole career, pretty much, is spent in this time that we call mid-career. So if you think of it this way, mid-career is your career. So to help put some context around this and tell you a little bit about where I'm coming from in talking about mid-career, let me tell you about where I am in my mid-career. My name is Nadine Richmond. I'm a researcher at VMware. I've been here for about 3 years now. And I have been working here in Silicon Valley as an engineer for 12 years. I've got a master's, you can read the rest, it's not all that terribly exciting. I count my career as starting from when I completed my master's, even though I was working in the field as an engineer before that, if only because it's a very convenient cutoff point, and it's also when I moved here to the Valley, so it makes it even easier to remember how long ago that was. So what we're going to talk about today are the problems that we face as mid-career women, as well as what is this mid-career donut hole, and most importantly, what can we do about it? So thinking about the problems that we face in mid-career, there's one flip answer here, which is that there's 24 hours in a day. There's only 7 days in a week. There's only 365 days in a year. We have limited time, and there are no shortage of things that we could spend that time on. Everyone in this room has more calls for their time than they actually do have available time. And this is not including, you know, important things such as sleeping or eating or just not working for a change. Let's go a little bit further into what these problems are. Now, I don't think that we can talk about being mid-career without also talking about our personal lives, because our personal lives and our professional lives are closely intertwined. If you're unhappy personally, that's probably going to spill over into your career. If you're unhappy in your career, that's going to spill over into your personal life. Maybe this is just me, I have to admit that if I've had a bad day at the office, that comes home with me. I would prefer that it didn't, but it does. And so if thinking about the problems that we face as mid-career career women, we have to think about both sides of this coin. On the career side, the question that I get asked so often is, what's next? What are you going to do next? And the way that this question is phrased depends on who is asking it, but in essence, there's four options for me as a reasonably senior technical woman at my company. There's to continue to stay in tech, to continue to be a technical contributor and grow in my technical skills and climb that individual contributor ladder. On the other hand, there's staying in tech-ish, which is to say not really being a technical contributor any longer, but now transitioning into something like marketing or product management or sales or technical writing, something that's closely aligned to being engineering or that would really benefit from the insights of an engineer, but isn't necessarily still being an engineer. There's also been, pretty much since I hit about the 5-year mark, the question of when will you move to management? My mother, by the way, is the worst person who asks me this question because she doesn't understand that there is a career to be had without moving to management. But even outside of my mom, there are plenty of people around me who ask me, both who are in technical careers and not, who say, when are you going to move to management? And there's always one option, which I just found out that a good close friend of mine is taking at the end of this summer, of getting out. She's leaving tech altogether, she is going back to school, and she is getting an MBA in sustainable business practices, completely leaving the industry. There's other ways of getting out of the industry as well. This was just one that hit my inbox 2 days ago, and my thought to myself immediately was, oh no, another one down. So what is this mid-career donut hole? It's the point where we as women are most likely to drop out of a technical field. It happens around age 35, and it's usually attributable to a couple of categories of problems, either a lack of support or a lack of growth. Let's talk a little bit more in depth about what's working against us. The first thing is isolation. As we continue to grow in our technical careers, there's fewer and fewer women around. You might have built a network when you started out in your career of other women that you could talk to. That network thins because people move to, because your friends move into product management or to marketing or open a winery, as another of my friends did. Or start their families, become a stay-at-home mom. You do that or just drop out for a few years, and as someone asked, how do you get back into tech after you dropped out of the industry? But that changes for me as a technical woman still working at a highly technical company. It changes the landscape of who I have to talk to and who can share my experiences and who understands what it is and where it is that I'm coming from. There's also the problem of being nice versus being aggressive. We talk about that as if you can't be both nice and aggressive. One thing that I found really fascinating, I read a research report which discussed recommendation letters, the study was done in which they took a description of a person and they described that person as aggressive. And they gave two groups of hiring managers that exact same description with one word changed. And the one word changed was the name of the person. One group got a female name, one group got a male name. Everybody in the hiring managers in the group with the male name rated that person who is described as aggressive as more likable than the people who rated the exact same description with a woman's name. She was viewed as less likable because she was described as aggressive. And there's plenty of other research out there which tells us that women are told that we have to be nice to get along. We have to get along to grow in our technical careers, and that being aggressive is a bad thing. However, to grow in your technical career, you have to be aggressive in so many ways. We have to figure out how to balance that. It's an extremely hard balancing act, and we don't always do a great job of it. Another thing that works against us is our own beliefs and our own expectations. One of the things that I personally fundamentally believe about tech is that it's a meritocracy, that if I do great work, then I'm going to get recognized for it. And I think that's true, but I also think there's a little footnote there. Because one of the most important lessons that I've learned so far is that no one cares about my work as much as I do. And nobody understands my work as much as I do. Certainly, no matter what you're doing in a technical career, no one else has the opportunity to take the time to understand your work as deeply as you do. So it's not playing politics to go out and tell people about your work and to explain to them how your work impacts their work and to come up with ways that together your work can be better and create a better product for you and your company. We can't rely on the idea that if we just stay heads down in our offices and keep on tapping away and keep on creating more and more awesome code, that the meritocracy will catch up with us and will recognize us for being as awesome as we totally are. We have to be out there selling ourselves. we have to understand that the meritocracy does exist, but we have to prove our merit. Now, the embarrassing part about giving a presentation like this is the moment when you realize that you skipped half of a previous slide. I know, right? Isn't that an awesome feeling? Which means I skipped the personal half of what were of the problems that we face in as mid-career women. And I wanted to go back to this because this is really important as well. On the personal side of things, if you've established, one of the things about establishing yourself early career is that in many cases, you're also establishing yourself as an adult. It's your first job out of college. If you're like me, you're moving to a brand new state. You've never lived in the area before. You know no one there. And so you have to establish yourself not only in your career, but also in having a flat and getting new friends and becoming an adult and doing all of the crappy parts of being an adult that nobody told me about. If part of establishing yourself was establishing a relationship, in mid-career, you've got a new problem, which is the two-body problem. What do you do when both of you have careers? I'm married. My husband is a principal engineer at another Bay Area software company, and we have to balance his career and my career. For example, when I was starting my job hunt, my husband had also reached the conclusion that it was time for him to move jobs. And so the two of us together sat down and talked about this, and we decided that we would both start looking for a job simultaneously, and after a few weeks, evaluate where each of us was in the job hunt process. And that particular time, anybody who's looked for a job knows that getting a job is not just about you saying, "Hello, I would like a new job, and I am awesome, and you should hire me." It's also about there being great opportunities out there for you that meet your career goals, that meet what you want in your life, and that get you the next step, whatever that next step might be. So, in hunting for a job, there's a fair portion of luck associated with you being looking at the same time the right position is out there looking for you. And so after a few weeks, he and I assessed where we were in our job hunt, and I was the lucky one that time. I had gotten a lot of really high-quality nibbles, and he had gotten a few that weren't panning out so well. So we decided together that he would suspend his job hunt so that I could pursue these opportunities and get myself established into a new position. And then after I was established, he would resume his job hunt. We wanted to have that base of stability and that place to be able to come back to where not both of us were completely stressed out of our minds about the whole process of looking for jobs and interviewing and all of the stress that's associated with that. And it ended up working out for us. I got an awesome job at VMware. He got his position as a principal engineer, and we both grew in our career. But we had to consider what looking for a new job meant for us as a couple. On the another personal issue, now I don't have any children. I have a cat, and she doesn't require anything like daycare, and we can go away for the weekend and leave her with an extra bowl of food, and nobody cares. But there are other family issues that impact us as well, such as aging family members. These are all calls on our time that we have to figure out how to find enough hours in that 24-hour day and enough days in that 7-day week to manage that. And I mentioned personal time, if only because I am so particularly bad at it. This honestly is one of my personal failings. I am the worst person in the world to talk about how you should do this. And this is a reminder to myself that I need time to not work and to not be taking care of the house or trying to take care of my parents or taking care of other things, that it's perfectly okay and in fact necessary for me to do something as frivolous as going to get a pedicure or reading a whole magazine cover to cover. All of that is okay, and these are the challenges that we face. So now I'll jump back to going through the mid-career donut hole and what we can do to get through this. The problem of isolation, in my opinion, is the biggest one that we face because we lack role models. We don't, as our networks thin and fewer women are there in the industry, we also have fewer and fewer women who we can look up to. I honestly think that my company does an awesome job at promoting women and at helping us network and supporting us in our careers. But at VMware, there are approximately, last I heard, about 400 people at the staff level, which is my level or above. There are two people at senior staff and principal. I know both of their names. One of them sits around the corner from me. We're doing more, and I'm seeing more. We're seeing more women promoted, and we're seeing more women get opportunities within the company. But this means that for so many women, we only have two people to really look up to who have reached the most upper echelons of my company as technical individual contributors. And this is something that we have to change. So in thinking about this, one of the things that I think we need to do is to skip back to the previous slide and talk a little bit about what insufficient role models mean to us. Because insufficient role models mean that I don't have anyone to look up to. It's not even that I don't have a mentor. It's that I don't have someone there who I can say, look, she's a vice president, she's technical, I can be like her. I don't have to have a meeting with her to look up to her. I don't have to have a personal relationship with her to look up to her. And I don't have to stop and say, why is it that there aren't any others around? Why is she the only one? This is one of the problems that we in tech know that we need to solve. And the way we solve it is by getting through this donut hole so that fewer women drop out of the industry. So I think that the most important thing that we can do to help get us through this is solving that isolation problem and finding and supporting our networks, finding who it is, who are the women who we stand with and who are in the same place that we are. Beth yesterday talked about this as well, the importance of having an environment that is supportive, where there are other people around who are like you. I feel this every day. I go into meetings, and I am the most senior technical woman in the room, and I can't tell you how many times I've thought I was from marketing or PM. And that really hurt. That's really annoying. And I would really like that to change. And I say, no, actually, I'm a staff researcher. Thanks for asking. This is one of the problems that we face, is that since there's so few of us, when I'm in the room, I'm not even assumed to be part of the technical conversation if the people in there don't already know me. And so I need to be able to reach out to my friends and to reach out to my colleagues so that I get through this donut hole and so that I don't decide to go get an MBA in sustainable business management or open a winery or move to PM where there are more women or move to marketing where there's way more women. Move into a place where I can find those role models, where I can find a path, where I can see that another woman has made this path and that I too can follow that path. And a lot of that, I mean, we're here today, so clearly we're in an awesome environment for that, but there's other opportunities as well, here we can do birds of a feather meetings. There's always meetups, certainly here in the Bay Area. And for those of you who aren't aware, there's the Sisters mailing list, which is an all-woman environment where conversations are completely confidential. And that's a really awesome place to be able to go and say, I am experiencing this really thorny issue. How do I get through it? And get input from women across the world with an amazing diversity of careers and the paths they followed and experiences to be able to say, well, when I experienced something similar to this, here's what I did. I found this really invaluable to me, especially in the past couple of years where I'm looking around and finding fewer and fewer women at my level. Another thing that I think we should do is to know what the cultural expectations are about us as women. Because if we know what they are, we can use them to our advantage, at least in the short term. Yet we know that we have to be seen as being nice if we're going to advance in our careers. We know that likability is an important thing in advancing in your career. How can I, with that knowledge, I can use that to shape my interactions with people so that I am viewed as nice while still doing what it is that I need to do and not making sure that I'm not being taken advantage of, that I'm doing the right things that grow in my that help me grow in my career. Long term, we have to shift the culture. We can't just have it be that I have to be nice to get ahead. We have to make it okay for me to be aggressive and to get ahead. Because if I can be aggressive and get ahead, then others can come and be aggressive and get ahead and have that be an accepted part of what we do and why we do it. It can't just be that it's the men who are aggressive and the women who aren't. This is a false dichotomy, and we have to be part of the solution. Now, part of this, which is really uncomfortable to talk about, is that these cultural expectations are also our own. To go back to that study that I mentioned earlier about the description of the person, the hiring managers viewed him as being more likable than they viewed her as being more likable, that was true when hiring managers were female as well. We also have these cultural expectations, and we have to be careful about it as well. I have to admit that I was reading that, and I reflected back on some interviews that I did about a year ago, and I remember saying that a woman that I interviewed wasn't very likable and that I didn't think she would fit in our team. And I look back on that, and I wonder, was I dinging her for being too aggressive? This is a hard question to have to ask yourself, but it's something that we do have to consider, because it's not just me, Nadine, against the world. It is us against the culture that we're in, and we are products of the culture that we're in. And we have to be aware of how we perpetuate those cultural expectations as well. An important corollary here, I have to say, is that we have to, I've heard women talk about the other woman being my competition, that there's only room for one woman on this team or on this committee. And I see your very sad face, and that's exactly right, because that's not how it is. It's not that there's only space for one woman. Maybe we did start out where they said, well, okay, we've got to get a woman. But now we're past that now. We need to move beyond that. And we, as women, also need to recognize that other women are not our competition, or at least they're no more our competition than anyone else who is applying for this position. We also need to know what holds us back. Some of that is internal, some of that is external. We all know about imposter syndrome. I'm not going to discuss that any further, if only because I don't feel qualified to talk about it. Thank you. We know that that is the kind of thing that holds us back. Other things that hold us back, it's been mentioned a few times here that men are more likely to apply for a position even though they don't have all of the skills that are necessary, or they have fewer of the skills that are listed as necessary, or when they have less experience than what is listed in the job description. If a woman sees 2 to 5 years on a job description, she won't apply unless she has at least 3 years. A man will apply if he's got a year or a year and a half. Those are the kinds of things that hold us back, and we have to know this. And this is something that I have to admit I've done myself, is that I've looked at a job description and read it over and said, oh, I can't apply for that. I'm not apparently God's gift to everything by reading this wish list of a job description. I won't apply for that. And I need to remember that I'm holding myself back. By not applying, I'm not even in the running. At least if I apply, I'm in the running. My chances might be slim because I don't have all of the experience and I don't have all of the skills listed, but at least I'm in there. And that's the only way. You can't win the lottery if you don't buy a lottery ticket. You can't get a job if you don't apply for it. You have to put yourself forward, and you have to not let yourself be held back by your own self-doubt. The final thing, and this is, again, a personal failing of mine, is that you have to accept that you can't do it all. We often take on way more than we can chew. We often say, someone will come to us and say, Nadine, you did a really great job with this. I would love if you could help me here. And you are honored to be asked. And you say, of course I will help you out. Maybe that's not the right thing to do. When an opportunity comes your way, I think, by the way, when opportunity knocks, answer the door. That doesn't mean you let it in. You decide. Look at that opportunity and decide whether it fits with your goals and where you are right now personally and professionally, and decide whether it's something that you can take on. I'll give a really personal example. A couple of months ago, I had, this is all one word, I promise, I had non-cancerous tumors, one word, removed from my abdominal wall. Trust me, everybody around me freaked out. My boss freaked out, my parents freaked out, my husband freaked out, and I'm like, remember, one word, non-cancerous tumors. But this means that I have an amazing 12-inch scar now from my hip to my belly button, and I had to take 2 months off of work. And during that time, I'm still getting requests to do things because people don't know that I'm out. You know, I mean, it's not like I broadcast to the world that I was going to be out of commission for a while. And I got you know, invitations to do things and asked to help out with things. And I've had to turn down a lot of things because even today, standing here, it's actually still hard for me. Because as I learned from my surgeon, the length of your recovery time is directly correlated to the length of your incision. And they say it's a minimum of 3 weeks per inch. And I'm looking at that going, oh, no, 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 that's not acceptable. So you know, even now, I have to be very, very careful about, even though I'm 2 months past this, I still have to be very, very careful about the amount of energy that I have and the amount of time that I have. And I have to be really careful to say, no, I'm sorry, I can't do that. Now, in some respect, this has actually been an awesome forcing function, because it has forced me to really consider what's in front of me. Because I have to say, recovery gets its way whether I like it or not, and I don't like it. But I have no choice. So this has really, truly forced me to stop, and every time somebody makes a request of my time, or in some cases a demand of my time, I have to be able to say, no, I can't do that. And one thing that I sincerely hope is that I will be able to continue that lesson after I am fully recovered and really, truly consider all of the opportunities that do come my way and decide whether they fit into what I'm trying to accomplish now. Now, if I think about all of those things that I just talked about, in many respects, one word comes to mind, and that's reaching. Sheryl Sandberg said we need to lean in, and I don't think that's enough. I think we need to reach. And I think there's many aspects to it that are really important. I think the first thing that we have to do to get us past this donut hole is to reach up for new opportunities, whatever they might be, whether it's speaking at a conference like this, whether it's running a meetup, whether it's taking on a new opportunity at the office. So long as this fits in to where you want to go, reach up for those new opportunities. We also need to reach out to our friends and to our colleagues. This is part of the networking. This is part of the point where when I've talked about isolation, I've talked about how some of my friends have dropped out of the industry altogether or have taken time off or something. But I have to admit, one thing that I haven't done a great job of is keeping up with all of the women who are in my network. And so I only find out that they've dropped out of the industry 6 months or a year later. I need to do a better job of reaching out to them to continue to keep my network strong. And I also need to reach down to others who need a hand. I need to be open to people who are looking for assistance. I need to be open to people who are looking to figure out what is next and who need help from someone who has been, who is a little bit further along the path than they are, so that we can together get further. So, I'm perfectly in time, excellent. So, in terms of thinking about what's next, I think we all have a donut hole. I think that we all have things that we can do that would help us get through mid-career and make it into the late career that doesn't actually exist. It's still called mid-career. I think that there's a lot that we can do so that we don't drop out of the industry, so that we have more women to look up to. And so the first thing that I think we need to do is stop and consider, where am I today? What do I need to do so that I'm not the only woman around me, so that I don't feel alone, so that I don't feel like I don't have a support network? And we're here. Network your butt off. Build your network here, because clearly this is a group of people who cares deeply about this and who is going to be part of what you do in the future. One of the things that I've learned in going to conferences over the years is that while the technical talks are awesome, hi, it's the hallway track that's so important. It's about having the opportunity between sessions to talk to the people you've met or talk to the people who are on stage and say, you know, you mentioned this, what do you think about this other thing? Or to say to someone who just was sitting next to you, who you've never met before and you've been trying to work up a way to figure out how to start a conversation with them, she was crazy, wasn't she? Or wasn't that great? You start that conversation, and because we're all here for that conversation and we're all open to it and receptive to it. Even those of us who are, like me, score 90% introverted on the Myers-Briggs. And then after you go back to your regular life, figure out how to apply it. Evaluate where your network is today. Do you still have those great contacts that you used to have? What happened to that one awesome manager that you had a few years ago? What happened to that person that you worked with and both of you left your jobs a few months apart and you thought she was the most awesome person ever and you two got along great while you were in the office and you really liked working together? When's the last time you reached out to her? Evaluate your network and reach out to it. Spend some time nurturing your network. And when you think about career growth, remember that career growth is not just about growing your skills, whether they be hard technical skills or soft skills. Remember that, especially if you're looking for a new job, networking is the way you get your new job. And so by nurturing your network and building your network, you are actually growing your career too. And don't forget to be open to others networking with you. Like I said, I'm an introvert, and it's sometimes really hard for me to accept when somebody comes up to me and says, let's chat. I'd like to learn more about this. Do you want to have coffee? Because the introvert and the imposter in me says, oh my God, no. And that's not something that I can do. I have to be open to other people networking with me. Not only because I know that it's important to both of us, but also because I know that if someone is asking me this, they probably have a need that I can help them with, that they're looking to me to help them through something or give them a listening ear about a situation they're in. Or maybe they're just interested in a job with my company and I can get them hooked up with the right hiring manager. That is a perfectly acceptable thing to do, and I am happy to do that kind of thing. Now, the last thing that I'll leave you with is that this is something that I truly believe personally, is that you should be the change that you want to see in this world. One of the changes that I want to see in this world is that I want more technical women at higher levels. I need to see that. And if I need to see that, I have to get through this donut hole, and I have to push on through and figure out what it means to get to the next level. And I have to be able to talk to other women and help them understand that, yes, it's possible, and yes, they can get through it too. Now, to be fair, I mean, this is the change you wish to see in this world is often attributed to Gandhi. As far as I can tell, he didn't actually say that. He said something significantly longer. However, I think that be the change that you want to see in this world is a fair and accurate representation of what he actually said. So with that in mind, thank you. I'll be putting these slides up on my blog. Probably, I was going to say tomorrow, but I'm actually flying tomorrow to attend my high school reunion, of all things, which I can't imagine how this happened. Yes, exactly. I can't imagine how this happened. I really don't know. And I don't approve either, but there it is. But the slides will go up on my blog over the weekend, and you can reach out to me on email or via Twitter. Thank you. Okay, it worries me that she comes up with a laptop. Oh, okay. I was going to say, that's the list of questions. Absolutely. Well, so one thing that I've observed is that if you make it through the donut hole, you know everyone else who has. It doesn't matter whether you've worked together. All that it matters is that you are both in tech, you have stayed in tech, and you've traveled in even vaguely the same circles, which is to say you've both stayed in tech. I was at a meetup a couple of months ago, and there were two women on stage talking about their experiences. And they'd been in tech, they each said that they'd been in tech for 25 years. They had never worked at the same company. They couldn't identify that they had any friends in common, but they knew each other because they'd been in tech for 25 years. And they always knew the other senior technical woman in the room. And that's something that I have to admit that I've observed myself, is that if I go to a meeting and there's another woman in the room, I'm like, who are you? I don't know you. How do I not know you yet? It's a pretty small company we work for. We should know each other. And that's, so yes, absolutely. And certainly I've had that experience of being afraid to approach somebody because I've heard that they're difficult to get along with. Or that they're super smart, which in some way also is intimidating, and thus didn't move forward. That is an excellent quote, and I approve.
Yes. I don't have so much a question as to say, I really like your analogy around reaching.
Oh, thank you.
And I have to be honest, I love Sheryl Sandberg's talks and the concepts and all that, but the lean-in part always made me kind of like, go, really? That's it. That's just wonderful. I totally can use that.
I bet Beth and I are on the exact same page on this one.
Yeah. So actually, I think that part of my perspective comes from being around of men who are trying to change the culture a lot, who have been involved, you know, I was around the Agile movement for a really long time, who, so frustration with the way things are isn't what sets us apart. Like, what sets us apart is that people look at us and think, oh, it's a unicorn. But yeah, so reaching out for what we're looking at instead of, I think that women are sometimes pressured to accept things the way we are because it's we're going into this men's world and we don't have that sense of ownership that lets us step in and try to change that world.
Yeah, I mean, I read Lean In as well because, I mean, at this point, it's been out for 6 months, I suppose, and it's kind of required reading if you want to grow in a technical career because Sheryl Sandberg wrote it and clearly she has grown in her technical career. And I'm not going to try to speak for you at all here, but my opinion of the book was that, you know, I read it and I'm reading it and I'm going, yeah, yeah, yeah. And then I get to page 167 and that's the end of the book. And the book is spaced at a page and a half, so, you know, it didn't take that long to get there. And then I read the acknowledgments, which are another 20 pages, and she acknowledges that she had a writing partner, which I believe is writeries for ghostwriter who is acknowledged, and she had a research team at Stanford. So, I mean, you know, she had amazing references for everything that she talked about in the book, and I'm looking at this going, you had all of these resources available to you, and I don't feel like you told me anything that I didn't know. Everything had face validity. Yeah, like I read that and go, yeah, that totally makes sense. Nothing made me question what I'm doing or where I'm going or why I'm doing it or how I get to the next step. And that was something that I really think is a missed opportunity.